These guys survived the David Kahn era of Timberwolves basketball and live to tell about it. It's Flagrant Howls.
And Kyle is back. Must be nice, by the way, Kyle. He's back from Hawaii. I said that to trigger him on purpose because we will get into a pet peeve of Kyle's later in the podcast. But
that was good.
We've got producer Ross, and I just want, before we get into any Timberwolves things, Kyle has like a week plus worth of Wolves takes built up. Here's how big Flagrant Howls is getting, okay? So Roscoe, I was texting Kyle this yesterday. Took our dog Maya in for her annual vet exam yesterday at our local veterinarian. And it's, by the way, it's today is the 2-year adoption anniversary for our little Maya Mackie. She's a West Coast dog that we brought to the Midwest. Not sure if she was going to like the winter. Loves the winter. And we get done with, and we've had the same vet for several years over like a couple different animals. And for the first time ever, he goes, "Hey, I just want to ask you, so you do like sports media, right? Sports podcasting." I was like, yeah. First time he's ever asked. So do you know Kyle Tighe? And I was like, yeah, dude, Kyle and I are doing Flagrant Howls together. He's actually become one of my best friends over the last couple of years through this process. If you didn't know that, Kyle, I consider you a really good friend now.
Yeah, updating LinkedIn as we speak. Yeah.
And he goes, "Dude, I coached Kyle in high school soccer, his traveling team in high school soccer." Total douchebag, Kyle. No, he said everything great about you, loved you. Dr. Lloyd, great veterinarian. Yeah. But it's a Dr. small John world. Lloyd. Awesome veterinarian. It's a small world. And also at the same time, it's great to see Flagrant Howls making such an impact on the veterinarian community.
Dr. John Lloyd was he's a great vet, but he might have been an even better soccer player. Super fast. Got up and down. He was a winger on the side. But yeah, that's just another. I kind of had one of those too. I had a friend who is a OT down in Phoenix, and he texted me this morning that they have like a new resident. I don't know how any of that medical stuff works, but they have a new resident who is a big Wolves fan and is a fan of the pod. And it was all just coming full circle, and it's way too much for me to handle. But I will
all
say
this newfound fame, you know, it's
been. It was tough to be away for a week. I listened to all the Flagrant Howls. I think you and Judd always do a good job. I think Jim was, you and Jim did the Thursday episode, and there was just a lot of talking about old stories. And I saw a couple people were like, "Oh, you know, talk about basketball." Dude, Jim Pete could do 45 minutes on making a BLT, and I would listen to that podcast. So I thought that was a really good one as well. But I'm glad to be back. So thanks for having me.
We're happy to have you back.
Can we very quickly, as we continue the BS, I just want to relive your soccer career. How long did you play soccer? What location was this? The masses want to know.
This is North Dakota, Grand Forks?
Yeah, Grand Forks, North Dakota. There's two high schools in Grand Forks. There's the good one, Red River High School, and then there's the other one, Central High School. Red River was always pretty good at sports. We're good at soccer. Won a state title. I was solid. I did start my senior year. Again, just not the best. Like at anything else in life, I'm not really the best, but I was just good enough to get out there and set up all my other teammates, played midfield. And then I played a little bit in college. I like to tell people that don't know me, I have friends listening to this right now, I played soccer in college, full stop. Now, it was intramurals, but I don't have to give them that added thing. So I did play in, I say the same with basketball. I was like, yeah, I played a little basketball at University of North Dakota. It was at the rec center, but they don't have to know that. So a former athlete, I still have all my years of eligibility, but have transitioned, I guess, into a podcaster and part-time
civilian life. Civilian life where you just talk about the Timberwolves. Yeah.
And how about that for a small world very quickly? This is out in the Grand Forks area of North Dakota, Minnesota. Yep. The vet, Phil, then leaves that area, winds up in Minneapolis, St. Paul, treating your animals.
It's crazy. I know. It's amazing. What a small world. And now Kyle's out in Portland. We're global here with this podcast. Thank you. Wherever you listen, whether you coached Kyle in high school or whether you just stumbled into this podcast last week, we appreciate all the Flagrant Howls listeners and viewers here. So, okay, I almost just want to turn it over to you because you were vacationing, you were unplugging, getting ready for the playoff stretch here. So the Wolves are 6-3 since the Karl Anthony Towns injury basically was expected to write them off forever in the Western Conference. They were going to tumble mathematically out of the top three, out of the playoff bracket entirely. That has not been the case. So I don't know. You tell me, like, what are you the most passionate about since you've been watching this team from afar over the last week and a half?
Well, it was great because I was down in Hawaii and I got to hang out with my family. My mom's having some more health issues, so it was good to see them, check in. My dad's birthday was last week. But I was looking at the schedule, and I was like, okay, so what have I missed since we last talked? The Wolves beat the Jazz last Saturday, March 16th, pretty handily, good game. Then it was Monday, right, that Ant had the dunk. So yeah. I haven't been on a pod since then. So if nothing else, we'd just like to confirm that that dunk reverberated all throughout not only this podcast and this country, the mainland, but also, you know, other islands. My dad and I probably watched the replay of that. Like, it was a Zapruder film 400 times. What a great dunk moment. To see a guy get possibly a concussion from a dunk was wild. So that was cool. Then they had the Nuggets loss, which I thought you guys did a good job of recapping last week. It was like the closest thing to a moral victory as you can have, the way they fought against Denver, really shorthanded, no Nas. And then the Cleveland win and the Golden State win. That Golden State win, just to kind of go to the last game, I had in my notes, like, Golden State played really hard, and they treated that like a playoff game, which is funny because they're a dynasty and they have all these Hall of Famers, but they definitely came into that game being like, this one means something to us. And to still lose it on their end, you kind of heard those emotions post-game. I mean, Steph and Steve Kerr weren't on the same page. Draymond sounded kind of defeated. I thought that it wasn't the best win of the season, but they took Golden State's best punch and didn't even wobble. I mean, yeah, they weren't leading for, I don't know, 3.5 quarters of the game, but once they turned the screws to Golden State, they just showed you that there's no concern. If that was a potential playoff matchup, I don't think the Wolves have any concern whatsoever about Golden State.
That was, let's stick on that game for a second, because the Warriors came in more desperate than the Timberwolves. I mean, the Warriors are watching. The Rockets have now won 9 games in a row.
Yeah.
That's the hottest team in the NBA. They're back to 500, I believe, if not a game over. I can pull up the standings. And so right now, today, as we record this, the Rockets are a half game behind the Warriors for that final play-in spot. And I think the gap was a game and a half, maybe, when that ball tipped off. So the Warriors knew that. They know that they only have like 12 games left, and they're just clinging to there's no way they can make it out of the play-in into the top six. So they're just trying to stay alive in that 10 spot. So they came in, they're basically playing playoff lives on the line basketball inside Target Center. And they did a great job on Rudy Gobert early on. The Wolves turned the ball over 9 times in the first quarter. And so the Warriors came out and they were just like, haymaker,
yep.
Great defense, 3-pointers. Holy cow, they're up by 12 points early. And the Wolves took those punches. By the way, without Karl Anthony Towns, their second best offensive player, I think Ant is their best offensive player. And they kind of just shook it off, weathered the storm in the second and third quarter, and then it was the Wolves who had the next gear, and the Warriors are unable to get to that same next gear that they used to have like 3 or 4 years ago. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like if those two teams do meet in the playoffs in the first round, and I think at this point it would take the Wolves having to get the number one seed to face like the 8-seed Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
But I was definitely a little over-haughty 2 or 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago, saying, bring that team on. That's an instant sweep in the first round. Credit to the Warriors, dude, because they have found something with Kuminga now in their starting lineup, moving Klay Thompson to the bench for 25, 30 minutes, Chris Paul off the bench. Like, that's a scarier team than it was a month ago. I think that would be such a fun first-round series, though, still. If somehow the Wolves could get up into that one seed, Warriors can find their way in the play-in. But, yeah, like, that's the second time in Wolves franchise history that they have swept the Warriors in the regular season. So they should feel really good about weathering that storm, taking that punch, and then dusting the Warriors in the fourth quarter at home.
And when they played that back-to-back set earlier in the season with the whole Rudy Gobert choke thing, we talked on here about how it kind of felt like when the younger son or daughter is like a teenager and starts just beating dad in one-on-one. Yeah. And that's the Warriors again. Gave their best. They're like, hey, we're going to win this game to 11 in the driveway. This means something to us on this random Saturday or Sunday. And the kids still won. I think it was a tough, tough pill to swallow for them. And I'm with you. I was a little concerned a couple weeks ago because they were cooking a little bit, feel like they found something. But that thing they found, right, playing a little smaller, like Kevon Looney was a DNP for them, and he's one of their best vets. What worked for them in that hot stretch has no chance against the Timberwolves because you can't play small. Rudy was, I don't know what his box score was, but Rudy was dominant in that game again.
It was like a plus nine or a plus 10. And yeah, it's, that's like the Clippers have tried to go small too, because that's the way they did it with a different lineup in the playoffs against the Jazz. It is not that you can't have some success with certain lineups or smaller lineups, like for stretches, but the idea that you can just go small and start Draymond at the five. By the way, Draymond won the opening tip.
Yeah, I know. That was crazy.
I think he won it. He won the opening tip, and then he won another jump ball.
He won one against Jaden too.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, he's going to win the opening tip, and they're going to clown Rudy in the first quarter, but give it 48 minutes, and Rudy Gobert's impact is not something you can just take away by going small, like in previous iterations of the Jazz.
Yeah, it was all in all, like you said, the second time or whatever that they've swept them. It was just a really convincing win, and it's been a convincing, to another point you made, it's been a convincing stretch of basketball games since they lost Carl. I mean, the way they lost Carl, and just like on a random Thursday Woj bomb, and you're on a a six-game road trip, for them to kind of handle and play the type of basketball they have. I mean, they got not blown out by the Lakers, but that was just a weird having to go east to west, having coming off like, you know, back-to-backs. Like the Lakers, they didn't have any size. Rudy didn't play in that game. But since Carl's went out, they haven't really looked worse for the wear. And I'm not pro they're better flat out without Carl, but they have shown an ability to be more flexible without him. They've started Kyle. They've started Nas. They've closed with different iterations of things. They kind of get out and transition a little more. So it's been an interesting wrinkle these last, what did you say, 6 or 7 games that they've played without him?
It's not. They're 6-3.
6-3, okay.
It's been 9 games. Well, and you know, to your point, I'm with you. I think in general, you don't just get better taking Karl Anthony Towns off the court. But one thing that really has stood out, and Dane Moore had this tweet a day or two ago talking to Chris Finch. I think this was after the Warriors game. And I don't have it in front of me, so I'm kind of paraphrasing. But the Wolves have shot 40 or more threes 9 times this season. Mm-hmm. And 4 of those 9 have come in the 9 games that Kat's been out. So they're actually taking more threes. And they've been a good percentage make team. They just haven't taken the volume of threes that some of the other teams have. They were 21 of 40 in that game against the Warriors. And you're not going to shoot 50%. I get it. Like, it's not a guarantee that you're going to make 20 of them if you shoot 40. But one of the things that stood out that Chris Finch said was Naz Reid, in the increased minutes and the increased role, has committed, and I am quoting here, he has committed to taking at least 8 threes a game. And Anthony Edwards has committed to taking at least 8 threes a game. And if you look at Naz Reid's game log in the absence of Carl, it's like it's 11 threes, it's 10 threes, it's 8, it's 9 threes. So that's something that I feel like they've had a hard time, whether it's a Carl thing or a system thing or a Finch communication thing. Am I wrong on this, Kyle? They want Carl to shoot more than 5 threes a game. He's literally one of the greatest shooters in the history of the game when you account for his size. He's shooting 43% as a 7-footer from downtown, but he's only taking 5 a game. And he comes out of the rotation with the injury. Naz Reid steps in, also shooting like 40% from 3 this season, and says, "You want spacing? You want me to launch 8 or 9 or 10 of these a game? Sounds good to me. I'll stand out here in the corner on the wing, zero hesitation, and I will let these things fly." And this is from Finch, man. Like, the spacing has been what they want. Now, I think even if the spacing is better and you're getting more 3-point attempts from Naz Reid instead of Karl Anthony Towns, your roster is not as deep. You're still trying to fill all of these productive minutes with inferior players off the bench. But like, some of those comments from Finch are really interesting in that they're getting the spacing they want, and Naz Reid is hitting the mandatory requested 8 or 9 3-point attempts per game, and it's working.
It's complicated, right? Because I too took away from Finch's comments just not necessarily a dig at Carl, as more of just a gold star for Nas about just playing in the offense and letting it fly. You know, Carl's all NBA season that got him, you know, such a reward in his contract was that year before Rudy comes, right? Where he had kind of then mastered the pump and go. I think Dane had kind of not comped him directly, but mentioned it kind of looked like Giannis going from the 3-point line to the rim. Since Carl's been out, by the way, I think their free throw percentage and rate has gone down. It's one area that's kind of concerning that, you know, when the games tighten up in the playoffs, can you just be, you know, I always think back to that Houston Rockets loss, right, against the Warriors where they've missed 27 straight free or threes or whatever. Mm-hmm. You want to have a good blend and a good portfolio of shot distribution. But, yeah, Carl was at his best pre-Rudy when he was able to not only let it rip from outside, but also get to the rim. Well, they've cut, I mean, not that Nas can't, right? We always compliment his handle, but Nas has just been like, if I touch it, like there was a possession in that Warriors game where I think it was a messy possession. Mike Conley got under the basket, jumped in the air and kicked it to Nas in the corner. It was a tough catch and he still let it rip and he hit it. And Nas is just letting it fly. So if nothing else, it's always funny because Nas was brought in to be a poor man's Karl-Anthony Towns when he was, you know, signed as an undrafted free agent. You're starting to get this idea of when Carl returns, Carl, who is still more skilled than Nas. I think everyone, including those two players, would admit that. Carl, can you just be a rich man's Nas Reed? That would
is
be like
he, the... Is he... Okay, I'm gonna fight you on this for a second. And this is, again, this is more of like a gold star for Nas than a knock
on
Carl.
Yeah, that's fair.
Nas's game compared to where it was 5 years ago. So you kind of said like, I mean, you know, Nas Reed, not as talented as Karl-Anthony Towns. Or not as skilled as Karl-Anthony Towns. I think that gap is as narrow as it's been in 5 years. Now, Carl's a better free throw shooter. They're both shooting 42% from three on five attempts a game. Nas is doing it on far fewer minutes. If you want to start to look at like the advanced analytics of how they both project as players, like win shares per 48, Carl is 0.156, Nas is 0.13, like they're really close in win shares. Player efficiency rating, Carl's a little bit, like there's still a gap, but it's like, it is much closer than it was a year ago, 2 years ago. Even like the lineup combos, Nas Reed can play with Rudy. He couldn't last year. The dude just keeps, every year he just keeps stacking another thing. Even in the middle of the season, he just like keeps getting better. His handle is better now than it was 2 years ago. It's insane.
This is like the perfect internet argument, right? Because I'm right, and you're also right. But we're just going to get muddied up everyone's mentions. I still think Karl-Anthony Towns is a better basketball player than Nas Reed. But to your point, the gap has probably never been shorter. So that's kind of solidifies my idea of this all started with Karl-Anthony Towns and a poor man's Karl-Anthony Towns. Now it's like Nas Reed and a rich man's Nas Reed. Because for Carl, it's like, hey, eight attempts is not just a random number. I have said, to give myself one bonus point, eight should be the minimum the whole season in his whole career. Because again, if you just look at what he shoots, it's like if you take eight attempts a game, you're probably hitting 3.5 or 4. Like that just does so much for the offense. But it also is the lack of, like you said, Carl getting into the post. I mean, Finch had another joke, right? That I don't think I've called one post up since Carl exited with that injury. And that
shouldn't call him when he comes back either.
Declogs things too. So I'm still of the belief, especially in the NBA more than any sport, that you just want as much talent as possible. So I just don't believe, and maybe it'll pan out and I'll be wrong. Totally okay with that. But that the team is simply better without Carl, because even again, when you promote Nas into, I mean, Nas and Carl too are also branching away from each other. If Carl is still very much, you would think, either a non-traditional center or a more traditional power forward in today's game.
Yeah.
Carl, I mean, and Nas is like a wing. Like he's flat out just like almost a small forward in the way he plays basketball. So they're not even really playing. I mean, the Nas minutes or like the net rating with Nas at center still is like really bad. But defensively, when he's out on the wing, like he looks a lot better. And that's not Carl's strength. So it's nice to have all of them. And I think for the playoff run, if you're trying to go deep, you're going to need all of them because, again, it's like that three-headed monster. But we're just doing a bunch of rambling when we should just say that Nas Reed, since either inserted into the starting lineup or being asked to take on more of a role without Carl, has basically checked every box. And it's been incredible to watch. And then, too, from just a fan standpoint, Nas Reed towel night and just seeing the love that they had for that guy. I remember asking him at media day, like, how much did the fan base... I asked him this too with like the Young Gravy cunts. Like, how much did the fan base have to do with you re-signing? And I think it had to do a lot. Like, I do think fans should be credited for Nas Reed sticking around here because he feels that love. And he went from, again, an undrafted player that was kind of a DNP bench development guy to, I mean, that might be the starting power forward of the future. So Incredible stuff from him, and they definitely don't win a lot of these games. He's a Golden State killer. They don't win all these games without him, so credit to him, and I hope he stays in the starting lineup.
Yeah, and you could, I'm looking at his 5 years in the NBA now, too, as we continue this Naz Reid appreciation episode. I think that's what we're probably going to call this. And the scene at Target Center with the towels and the standing ovation, like, man.
It was so cool. That was just really, really cool. And whoever got me a towel, I owe you one. But it's good for him. I mean, that's an awesome story, too. Not to interrupt you, but like, he was a high prospect in high school. Like, he was up there with a lot of these other guys, and it didn't work. And I'm sure I'm sure someone will do a deep dive article, maybe, you know, someone in the newspaper or something. But it must have sucked to be like, I was this highly touted guy, and then I'm undrafted. Because you go undrafted, man, your career could be over any day.
Yeah.
And now he, you know, is not only on a team and in a starting lineup, but he's getting paid really well. And, I mean, he's a guy now that's part of the foundation of, like, you can't afford to lose Ant, you can't afford to lose Jaden, you can't afford to lose Naz Reid. Like, you want to retire that guy's number down the road.
I actually have I'm writing down another question I have for you. It's going to be a controversial question. But if you look at his career arc since entering the league as an undrafted guy who impressed at Summer League, basically demanded through his play a contract as a 20-year-old to where he is now at 24. There's a few things that really stand out. If you look at like his per 36 minutes, if minutes are all equal, per 36 minutes as a rookie, he was averaging 6 fouls per 36 minutes.
Yep.
It's down to 3 fouls. He was a foul machine even a year ago. He was like 5.5 fouls per 36 minutes. It's down to 3 now. His three-point shooting was 33% as a rookie, 42% now as a fifth-year veteran. His free throw shooting was, you know, 60 last year was 67%, up to 76% now. Just every step of the way this dude has grinded. So here's my controversial question for you. This is such a, I'm sorry for this, but I have to ask this question. Okay. I'm going to ask you in two parts, actually. We'll start with part one. The Wolves played the Nuggets in the playoffs last year without Jaden McDaniels and Naz Reid. They did have a healthy Karl Anthony Towns, Rudy Gobert, etc. But they were missing those two key pieces, right? So if I gave you two choices, you can enter a playoff series, the entire playoffs. So the entire playoffs, you either get a healthy Karl Anthony Towns and no Jaden, no Naz, or you get a healthy Jaden and Naz and no Karl Anthony Towns. It's a little unfair because it's two players versus one. I get it.
Yeah, but this is like a straight up fantasy football trade. I mean, I don't think it's that controversial. Again, we listeners of this pod probably know who's more pro any player than others. But you got in that scenario, you take Jaden and Naz.
You take the two players. Yeah, you're deeper.
Yep. Just, and that's, again, I'm biased too, right? Because I mean, Jaden, since I went on vacation, has played really, really well. So thoughts and prayers to everyone who was just over him because you took that L. But anyway, I would just rather have Jaden and Naz because what Jaden can do on the perimeter and then what Naz can kind of do on the perimeter, but also his shot creation. And again, right now in this small sample size, which is always something used to lower my enthusiasm, I'm trying to use it now to lower everyone else's. In this small sample size, Naz is basically giving you what Carl gave you. So if in that trade scenario, right, if the last 3 weeks, Naz as your running back has been awesome in fantasy, well, you're just getting a free Jaden McDaniels in that scenario. So yeah, it'll be interesting. I guess I had never thought about that when looking towards these playoffs and stuff, that like Jaden and Naz only have one playoff series of experience. Yeah. I'm sure everyone listening to this is like, yeah, no bleep, Sherlock, but they played in that first Grizzlies series and then neither got to play against Denver. So while Ant is embarking on his third playoff series, Jaden and Naz have like what, 5 games of playoff experience? So that was a great question. Okay. It also made me think.
So, but it's kind of like, of course you're going to take, we're talking about 3 really good players. If I can get 2 really good players instead of one, I'm deeper, whatever. Well, now comes part two. You get the entire playoff run and you have to choose either Karl Anthony Towns, but you don't get Naz Reid for the entire playoffs, or you get Naz Reid, but no Karl Anthony Towns for the entire playoffs.
You've really been holding out on that. This is like when you come back from vacation. It's like, oh, I have 160 unread emails. I am going to lean Carl over Nas, but I don't even like. I'm gonna go with Carl over Nas. I don't need to give That's you fair. A huge explanation. I think his shooting, and maybe he comes back, and maybe again this whole. Again, if in that scenario, Phil, Carl has to be 100% healthy, right? Mm-hmm. I thought Dane and Jay Stredick did a good job yesterday talking about, you know, if this is a knee issue, not only is his cardio going to be weird when he comes back, but, like, he won't have done leg day. Like, he won't have the lower body strength. So if you told me Carl and Nas...
He's going to be jacked up top. Like,
he's
going to make
the big lobster from SpongeBob. But if it's Carl and Nas 100%, I'm going to take the player that I just said in the last pseudo segment is the better player. But if you want to say Nas and make a case for it, I don't think you're going to be wrong. I will just say in general, to pull myself out of this Minnesota sports tornado, it would actually be kind of cool if they had them all, right? It would be cool
Agreed. I think I agree with that. By the way, I agree with everything you said about, like, Carl is a better player, just one-for-one comparison than Nas. The gap is more narrow than it's ever been. And in a perfect world, they've got both these guys under contract. There's room for both to be playing 25. I can make a case that I'd like to see Nas's minutes go up from like the 22, 23 a game with Carl to maybe take a little bit from Carl and put some more on Nas. I would take Nas, and it's more of a gut feel. I just feel like the energy he brings, the positive energy he brings, the quick, decisive nature of his shooting. I think he also really... Can I say that I think Nas has incredible basketball self-awareness, that he seems to know what he's really good at and also seems to know what he's not that great at or what he should minimize. He's just become so efficient within his basketball body and basketball mind. You know, like we went over a couple weeks ago, the Howls and Growls Jake Painting YouTube video where he lays out, man, when Carl leans into the stuff he's great at, which is catch and shoot threes and being the roll man in pick and roll, he's unstoppable, right? But then there's these other instances where when he's a post-up player or when he's dribble driving, the turnover rate spikes and the assist rate goes down. And you can sort of see that objectively. But I feel like Carl fights those trends rather than just like leaning into the things that he's really good at and minimizing the things that he's not. He kind of like fights the things that he's not that great at to prove that he can do those things. And I don't feel that same fight or struggle with Naz Reid. So it's like my long answer is I agree. Carl is a better player right now than Naz. But in a lot of ways, I feel like Naz is a better fit for some of the things the Wolves are trying to do. If you can get them both healthy and in the rotation and playing 25 to 35 minutes a game, bring on anybody in the Western Conference. I'm excited to see. The timeline is going to be interesting because you're kind of looking at like this 4 to 6 week push up against the first round. Do you shoehorn Cat back in sort of rusty, not in full 100% basketball shape as you're going into a playoff series against the Suns or against the Lakers or somebody? Or do you wait? Do you is he on your active roster, but he sits just to kind of feel out how the series is going? How they bring him back is going to be so interesting in the next 3 to 4 weeks, Kyle.
And that's a great case, and you probably won it. My thing comes back to there is a chance that Naz Reid, who has gotten better every year statistically, in his bag, whatever, he has just gotten better every year, that this is who Naz Reid is, right? Like, there's a chance that he's shooting 42% from three this year on five attempts. Yeah. He's a career 37% shooter from three, but he's shooting 42%. If that's just who he is, if he's just a 42% three-point shooter, then you go with it, right? But it's a little bit of that mystery box versus boat Family Guy analogy where it's like Carl is a 40% three-point shooter his whole career, and he's shooting 42% this year. So would you rather trust the guy in the playoffs that has just all... I mean, again, to me, I'm constantly worried about the spacing on this team because Kyle Anderson does play, because Rudy plays.
Did you see when the Wolves had, for a few different stretches against the Warriors, they had the Gobert, Kyle Anderson, and Ant would be out there too usually, but they had Gobert and Kyle Anderson on the court at the same time. And the Warriors, like, they didn't get called for illegal defense because they were doing enough checking back in, but they just, like, didn't guard two-fifths of the Wolves players on offense. They would instantly double Anthony Edwards. Gobert would just be, like, wide open somewhere, and Kyle Anderson would be wide open somewhere.
There was like a weird possession where going like left to right on your screen, I think Ant gets into the paint, Rudy is under the basket, Kyle's on the baseline, and then Nikhil is in the corner, like an Orion's belt of Nikhil, Kyle, and Rudy, and Ant throws the pass to Kyle, who then is like feet on the baseline, turns and just pivots and throws it to Nikhil, who hits a three. Nikhil Alexander-Walker has been just amazing all season. But that was like one of the weirdest, this worked, but the spacing definitely should not have looked like this type play.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, for the most part, the spacing has been really good. And again, it all is much, this is the Naz Reid appreciation podcast, but the biggest thing for Naz has just been his ability to stretch the floor. Everything else he does, his demeanor, his, you know, the Iowa Wolves mentality, right, of either dribble, like get the ball and make a decision right away or just get off of it. You see Jordan McLaughlin with that same thing. These guys that got those lessons taught to them when they were, you know, playing with Iowa. But that would be the biggest thing for when Carl comes back, is the biggest difference between Carl Anthony Towns and Naz Reid is their decision making and the time it takes to make those decisions. I think Naz did have like 5 turnovers the other night. But at least he's making quick decisions. When Carl comes back, in order to make a long run, you need all these guys. I would hope that Carl can make quicker decisions and just, again, be a rich man's version of Naz Reid. Because if they have all 3 of those guys and can interchange them, and you mix in Kyle Anderson a little bit, they're going to be such a tough out in the playoffs.
Yes. Okay, we're going to do a couple things here after we shout out a friend or two of the show. Some Timberwolves stat porn. It's been a few weeks since we've done Timberwolves stat porn, and there will be some more Naz Reid in here as we continue Naz Reid Appreciation Day here on Flagrant Howls. And then Kyle's question or conundrum of the week.
Oh, God.
Kyle's complaint of the week. We'll get to that. A shout out to our friends at First Equity Mortgage. David over at First Equity Mortgage helped me with a refinance about 7 or 8 years ago. I had a great experience. First Equity has been in the Twin Cities for 24 years. They pride themselves on supporting the community, treating every customer as a friend and neighbor. And David is a 20-year Wolves and Link season ticket holder, so he's definitely one of us. Not to mention, First Equity, they have a great reputation in the community, but they also offer programs for veterans and for new home buyers if you qualify. So check them out at femort.com. They've been a great friend of the show, femort.com, or go to scorenorth.com. Keyword David. Also, it's spring cleaning season here. I don't know. You're out in the Pacific Northwest. It just dumped like 2 days of snow on us here.
Oh, no.
Blizzard season here. I think this is the last one, knock on wood, until next winter. But you're probably tracking in mud and just grime now. Zero Res is here to help you guys. A 4.9 rating on Google with 17,000 reviews, which is pretty incredible. And if you call Zero Res today and ask for the Score North special, you can get 3 rooms Zero Resified starting at just $129. And this month, take $75 off when you get your air ducts Zero Res clean. That's 952-ZERO-RES or ZeroResMinnesota.com. Say you want the Score North special. Spell it forward or backwards. It spells the same. Zero Res.
There we go. I have a bunch of topics, too, that we can go through. I'll defer to you because you're more organized, but there's a couple quick laundry issues or housekeeping I'd like to speaking of housekeeping and cleaning that I'd like to go through.
Okay, let's do stat porn, house cleaning, and then Kyle's complaint of the week, question of the week, okay? We love ourselves some lineup combinations. It's been several weeks since we've done lineup combinations on this show. So let's go in and look and see who is working really well together in particular on this team. 3-man lineup combinations. Can you guess the best Timberwolves 3-man lineup combination according to net points per 100 possessions?
Since Carl went out or just in general?
This is for the whole season. It's lineups that have played at least 400 minutes together. So it's like the main rotational play. You're not going to find like Monte Morris on this list.
Okay.
Or your guy TJ Warren, who Doogie's reporting, is going to sign for the rest of the season. So good for him.
Ant, Nikhil, and Rudy?
That's a good one. That's the 4th best lineup combination.
Okay.
12 points plus 12 points per 100 possessions.
So, I know you're doing this to trick me, I think. What about Mike, Ant, and Rudy?
That's the 6th best combination, plus 11. Close. These are all great though. Like that's a plus 11 per 100 possessions.
Okay.
They're all lineups of death, dude. Like
What about Ant, Naz, and Rudy? That's my final guess. Okay, there we go.
Bye. A mile. That lineup, that 3-man combination, Ant, Naz, and Rudy on the court at the same time, is a plus 22 points per 100 possessions. The second best is plus 13 per 100 possessions, which is still very good. And that's Kyle Anderson, Anthony Edwards, Rudy Gobert. And then the third best one is Kyle Anderson, Anthony Edwards, Naz Reid. So Ant is a part of, and by the way, if you keep going, Ant is a part of the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. Ant is a part of the top seven lineup combinations.
Ant, Micah, Nori, and Crunch is like still 12.
How about Micah, Nori? Did you see that? Micah, Nori essentially like skipped out on the coaches meeting portion of the timeout at the end of the Warriors game, went right to the Wolves player huddle and said, hey guys, here's the play the Warriors are going to run right now to try and tie this up. He draws up the Warriors play that the Warriors are going to run, and the Wolves defended it perfectly. So Micah Nori is going to be a head coach in like 2 years.
Yeah, I was probably just going to say, last time I checked, this podcast was ranking in the top 40 of all basketball podcasts. So I have no comment on that. Ross, cut that. Much like Grady, I don't need anyone else to know outside of our little lifestyle podcast community that Micah Nori is an awesome head coach candidate and is likely going to be on five or six different interviews this summer. Yeah. Because he is just vital to what they're doing behind the scenes and is definitely not a 1A, 1B. Chris Finch still runs this organization, this operation, but to have a vice president like Micah Nori, he is so smart, so charismatic. His time will come, and he, no one deserves it more than him.
Also, speaking of Grady, he's calling his first TNT game.
That was one of my topics tonight.
Tonight or, I'm happy tonight, right, or tomorrow night?
I'm happy for Michael Grady, friend of the show. He deserves the biggest platform, but I don't want to lose him.
Mavs and Kings, the late slot on TNT tonight.
He did, I think you talked about this with Jim. He did such a good job in the moment on that Ant dunk. Again, I haven't been around for a week, so I have to clear this all up. But when Ant had that dunk, just the pure emotion that Grady puts out there while also being like he might have broken his hand.
Yeah.
I thought he did a good job of navigating that because you're so amped in the moment, but then all of a sudden your franchise player is looking at his hand and everyone's looking at it really grossly. So I'm really happy. I'm going to tune in tonight to watch a Tuesday night game that's non-Wolves related because Michael Grady's doing the call. So congratulations to him, but we cannot afford to lose him.
Yeah, I almost hope he like flubs a big call so that they don't call him again. I don't mean that, Grady. I root for Grady. I just want Grady to be the Timberwolves guy. So, okay, I got two more stat porn things for you. There's one more lineup combination. Let's go two-man lineup combination. So two-man pairings. I'm going to give you three strikes to guess the five top two-man pairings on the entire season for the Timberwolves.
Okay, Ant and Naz.
Ant and Naz is number three. Plus 12 per 100 possessions.
Mike and Rudy.
That's number five. Plus 10 points per 100.
And then Naz and Rudy.
Naz and Rudy is number one. Number one, dude. They were like a minus 10 unplayable last year. It is the number one pairing. And plus 14 points per 100 possessions.
I need to think about this take before I spew it out there. So what better way to do it than now? Some of it still is we have now seen, and the reason I think Chris Finch should get Coach of the Year votes and the reason that everyone should get praise for this is we've seen the two big thing work. Karl-Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert are bigs. Naz has become, to everyone's interpretation, more of a wing, mm-hmm. but he's a big wing, right? Like I've said, like Carmelo, Paulo, LeBron. Again, he's not as good as those guys, but to have like a power forward that actually plays the three alongside Rudy, I mean, it's more of a small ball lineup again with a more traditional, you know, four out Rudy patrolling the paint or, you know, four out on offense. So it makes sense. And again, it's credit to Naz because I know that was one of Dane Moore's predictions coming into this season that when him and I did a pod about, he just thought it was going to work. And he's like, I don't really know why. I think it's going to work this year. It totally didn't work last year.
Yeah.
But Naz's ability to do all this stuff, continue to work on his body, to be durable. He still falls down a lot and he gets beaten up all the time, but it's just Naz Reid, man. Naz Reid.
And I will say, before you try to guess the other two, I'm going to give you one that's outside the five. Just to not pile on Cat here, Gobert plus Cat is also a really good combo for them this year. It's a plus 8.5 points per 100. And it's not quite as good as the Naz Reid Gobert pairing, yeah. but that pairing is also working.
And I you'd have to, I guess, look at the numbers here, but Carl, I still think if you're choosing categories like who would you rather have for defense, I do think Carl has played better defense this year than Naz, but mm-hmm. Naz's improvement on the defensive end has been larger. But yeah, Carl, before he went out with that injury, I mean, I know the defense has slipped a little bit in terms of like net rating or, you know, all that stuff, But before Carl's injury, I mean, they were at one with a bullet for most of the season. And a lot of that is because of the Carl-Rudy thing working. Rudy was out for that Lakers game and a couple other games that affected their defensive rating. But all in all, again, these are just all wonderful things to start throwing out there for a team that, as I look around the league and the Clippers and the Warriors and the Mavs, like all these teams that they don't know what their identity is at game 71. The Wolves' identity is we're going to be big and we're going to play defense. And the rest will settle itself out. And that's great to kind of be hitting your stride towards the end of March.
So you've nailed three of the five. You've nailed number one, three, and five. Gobert and Naz Reid is number one. Ant and Naz Reid is number three. Conley and Gobert is number five. You're on a roll here. Can you guess the other two?
I don't think any of these are going to have Jaden in them. But I'm going to say Mike and Ant.
Mike and Ant is not in the top five. It's a plus 8 per 100 possessions, but it's not in the top.
Is it Nikhil and Rudy? That's my final guess. Okay.
That's number 2.
Let's see. What's
Nikhil
number 4?
Nikhil and Rudy is a plus 12 and a half. I mean you get two more strikes. You can get number 4.
Running out of combos. Josh Minot and anyone? No. Ant and Nikhil?
That's a plus 8 per 100. I'll give you a hint. It's the most commonly paired pairing. The most minutes played together of any pairing.
Oh God. Ant and Jaden?
It's a good guess, but it's incorrect. It's Ant and Rudy.
Oh, Ant, I thought I guessed that. Okay, that's fair.
Ant and Rudy, a plus 11 per 100 possessions.
This has nothing to do with what you were talking about, but there was also that possession where Ant had a pass to Rudy for a dunk that kind of split the paint. It was a weird kind of, I think maybe Dane Moore tweeted this one out, but it was this weird pass that looked totally awkward, but it just highlighted again that Ant's playmaking, that's another thing that we didn't have time to talk about today, but since Carl went out, I just think Ant's playmaking has been incredible.
He's figuring out the chess game, right? You can see him doing the calculus on, okay, they're doubling me. Where's the rotation going to? And boom, skip past corner three, right? Like, or corner pocket, as our guy Grady would say.
That's another good time for me to interject with a note I had. So I was catching up on all these podcasts. We've talked about before that Rudy Gobert was on Austin Rivers' podcast a couple months ago, and it was a really eye-opening conversation and makes you kind of be, if you weren't already, a Rudy Gobert fan. It was really cool. Rudy Gobert was really transparent and open. You should go listen to that from a couple months ago. But while I was on vacation, Phil, I also listened to the Bill Simmons podcast. He had Austin Rivers on, and Austin talked about some of that stuff about at 22, like Ant, or when Austin was playing him at 21 years old, Ant doesn't even know what he doesn't know yet. And I think the playmaking is one of those things. It's like he wants to be the best at all this stuff, but there's things he doesn't even know yet what to do or their importance. But that was a really good, I mean, they went deep on the Timberwolves. Russillo and Simmons did as well, talking about like what franchises in the West would you rather have for the next 6 years, like through the rest of the 2020s? And they both had the Wolves at like third. Which is kind of absurd, right? Because the teams they picked were like Denver, who is awesome, but then they picked all the teams that have all the picks. Minnesota doesn't have all those
picks.
Oklahoma
City's probably still in that three, right?
Yeah, but I think Russillo was like, man, I would rather just take Ant and the talent they have and don't worry about the picks. So it's been a good couple weeks for propaganda for the Minnesota Timberwolves. And it just all kind of revolves around this 22-year-old kid who every year, much like Naz Reid, has just gotten better and better. And now his playmaking is so dangerous that that's part of the spacing too. It leaves everyone else as a threat when Ant has the ball because they know that in a double team situation, it's a 4-on-3.
Yes. Okay. One more Wolves stat porn thing for you. This, I would say, one of the first flags we planted in the ground almost 2 years ago when we launched Flagrant Howls was that this is a pro Jordan McLaughlin podcast. And we played the lineup combination game. And like at the time, at the beginning of the first season of Rudy, J-Mac was showing up in all of the different top lineup combinations, even though he never really stuffed the box score. He was the ultimate organizer, the ultimate tempo setter. He knew how to get the Wolves in the right sets, right? He's kind of back.
He is.
And he's playing some fairly significant minutes, especially with the extra rotation slot open. I mean, they can't really make up for a 7-foot unicorn being out, so they're kind of going smaller. Like, there's lineups where you'll have like Monte Morris, Jordan McLaughlin, Anthony Edwards on the court at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So Jordan McLaughlin, who at the end of last season, regular season and playoffs, teams were literally leaving wide open for three like you would Rudy Gobert. Yeah, they just sagged off of a 6 foot point guard saying, all right, dude, take a shot. And he couldn't make anything. He's shooting 49% from 3-point range this year. And if you want to get into the analytics, the win shares, he is second on the team among qualified players in win shares per 48 minutes behind Rudy Gobert. Now I'm not putting him in the volume category of like 30, 35 minutes like a Rudy Gobert. But I think our guy's back. He's shooting it. He's healthy. The calf is healthy. And for 10 to 15 minutes a night, he's a great organizer on offense.
Probably wouldn't do the same numbers if we did the Jordan McLaughlin appreciation podcast.
Probably not.
But there is a real case to be made that that man's career has just been, you know, as difficult. I mean, he just caught a lot of DNPs, partly to what you said, that when he was out there, despite his activity level and his energy and his ability to kind of be a floor general, which is a trait that I just love in a point guard, his production just didn't match what your expectations were. His ability to shoot the ball now, I think that calf injury really nuked his powers last year as well, because he was bad last year.
Yeah.
But to be a bench guy, man, and I know Jim's talked about this before, we've had on, it's just so hard when you don't either know what your role is, know how many minutes you could get on a certain night. I think the coaching staff deserves a lot of credit for being transparent with him, just like they were with Troy Brown Jr. or some of these other guys. But, you know, I've been critical at times about the lack of development or maybe playing time for some of the younger guys, and it makes you wonder almost, like, are they good at developing their, you know, their younger players in this organization? Well, you can't say that and then not at least acknowledge what Jordan McLaughlin has done, what Naz Reid has done, what Ant has done. They might have a really good developmental program here. It's just with those guys taking off and getting better every year, it's kind of shortening the leash or the ability to get some of the super young guys on the floor. But J-Mac shooting, you know, if every time J-Mac gets a 3-point attempt and it's going to be a coin flip, you can't not play him. And he's going to be, I mean, I didn't think a month ago, that Jordan McLaughlin would be part of the playoff rotation. Like it was, yeah. I would have bet money that no, he's definitely out of it. I don't know still if he'll be a part of it, because now you're starting to flirt, especially if Carl comes back with like 9, maybe 10 man rotation. And you just don't see that in the playoffs. Because Monty Morris has been really good too, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he has been a very much underlying part of this recent success and their ability to kind of turn things around from that January slug fest. He's been awesome, and I'm really happy for him. He's a free agent this summer. You know, he's been kicked around the league a while. He's older than you may think. So I hope that this is a good opportunity for him to showcase what he can do, and he deserves to have a good solidified role on a good team.
Yeah, he's you're right. I think if he didn't step in and start hitting 3-pointers at age 27, where does his career turn to Europe at some point in the next mm-hmm. couple of years? But he is a bona fide. I don't think he's a starting point guard anywhere
no.
unless it's like a bad rebuilding team. But he's like a bona fide backup, 15 to 20 minute, kind of spark the offense, knock down some threes. He's definitely back in it. So there's your Timberwolves stat porn here. So we got like 10 minutes left on the podcast. If you've got some other Timberwolves laundry that you want to air out here, you're welcome to.
I think it was 2 weeks ago when we were on here. There's been so many different stories and reporting. Just for all the things that we've gotten wrong, most notably calling Denver Purdue, which, by the way, Purdue's actually pretty good this March Madness. But
it's still early in the tournament. I mean, Sweet 16's fine, but
that's fair. They didn't lose their 1-16 matchup. But I will say that we were 2 weeks ago. I just said, hey, I'm not really concerned about the ownership thing. And then the ownership thing kind of went through. I continue to believe that it'll, you know, get through the approval process, and we'll have more news on that later. But that's a big thing, because all the stuff we're talking about, the way I look at sports, doesn't really matter if the ownership stuff is messy or, you know, fractioned or whatever. And I think the new ownership group with Mark Lohr and Alex Rodriguez will continue to move forward. That'll be great for this team and for this organization. Mm-hmm. It'll usher in, I think, more former, you know, random Wolves of the Week to come back and be integrated into this thing, most notably.
Do you think KG will be at a playoff game?
This is just my two cents on this, but I mean, I don't think if the ownership thing were to get approved in mid-April, it would be like official. I don't think you're going to see like a jersey retirement this season. I think that they want to plan that and have a long runway to do it properly. Mm-hmm. And you don't typically see that type of stuff tied into a playoff game. But I do think he will be around the organization more once mm-hmm. the new ownership comes in. Again, we've talked about greasing the wheels. So that was one. And then just again, Jane McDaniels has been a lot better. I don't know what else to say. I don't know if you talked about it much, but he had 26 points against Denver in that loss. 15 points. He isn't fouling as much. Just happy for a guy that I think some people had. And you know what? Maybe rightfully so. But it's still making, what, 269th most money in the league. He is a very, very valuable contributor to a team and will probably get a lot of votes as one of the top 10 defenders in the league once the regular season is done.
Yeah, his job is very narrow focused for the next 2 or 3 months. And yes, I said 2 or 3 months because they could still be playing.
I don't know if I'm going to have enough PTO to be, speaking of vacation, to be following this team to the finals, but I'll just quit my job. It's fine.
But like, his job is to just clamp down on, if they play the Suns in the first round, all right, dude, go clamp Kevin Durant. Go clamp Devin Booker. If they play the Mavericks in the first round, plenty of guys on that offense, starting with Luka, to clamp. Like, maybe grab a couple rebounds once in a while. But the Wolves, and hit a corner three, you know? Like, they're going to need him to score like 9 or 12 points, go 3 for 6 from downtown in some of these games, and just make life hell on, you know, the isolation scorers. So we'll see what happens here. All right, what's Kyle's question or complaint of the week before we wrap this podcast?
This is probably everyone's just absolute favorite part. No, it felt good. I appreciate you and everyone else and Dane giving me some time off to go hang out with my family. It was a good recharge before. I know you and I and Dane and I have a lot of...
It must be nice.
We have a lot of content planned for this playoff run. I'm going to be back in Minneapolis a lot in April, May, and hopefully June. There's so many things in society we need to clean up and fix, and I hope everyone is doing okay out there with their mental health. But when it comes to the saying of it must be nice, it would be wonderful to get rid of that out of our vocabulary, because I don't even know what I'm allowed to say on here, but you just come off like such a douche to tell someone, oh, like if you're like, hey, I'm going on vacation next week, and like, oh, it must be nice. A, it is nice. It's wonderful. And B, it's just like, why? This is tied back into Wolf stuff, Phil. Let's stop hating on other people being happy. Like, what a weird thing to do. Like, if you're happy that, like I am, that the Wolves are off to, so far, their best, you know, season in 35 years. If you're one of those people that's like, oh, do it in the playoffs, buddy. Dude, they haven't done it in the regular season. They've won 50 games, 14% of their existence. This is going to be, I think, their fifth time with a win tomorrow against the Pistons, hitting 50 games. Yeah. Enjoy life. Like, be happy. Everyone is more miserable than ever. So when someone goes on vacation or buys something or whatever, like, oh, it must be nice. It is nice. And it's damn well deserved for everyone doing stuff. So
also, like, we were talking about this off mic. Just because you get to go on a vacation somewhere and you're in Hawaii and on the surface it is nice, doesn't mean that you're all, like, why would you say it must be nice to someone? You don't know. Maybe they've got something horrible going on in their lives. They've got a parent going to Mayo Clinic or whatever it is. I think people just need to just calm down on your little snarky comments.
And guess what? Normally when you say it must be nice, you look like a loser, and it is actually nice. Like, it is, if you want full transparency, it was wonderful. Look at this. I look like a nice just chocolate chip cookie. It was wonderful. There's some rumors going around on the internet that I want to just kind of get out in front of right now. Phil, you saw this on Instagram. Yeah, I did shoot a 77 in Kauai. Dude. Broke 80 for the first time, okay? Wow. It was nice.
Shattered so. 80. Shattered 80.
Also, bleeped did you my know, pants did you, on the back nine. Went
do you
like
add
double
it up
bogey.
As you go?
Oh, my God, yeah. We were, like, my dad and I were on top of it. It got to be about the 14th hole when we started to do, like, the perfect game for a pitcher. We're like, oh, let's not talk about it. Yeah. I was tracking, and then I put one in the water. There's a lot of wild nene, which are geese. A lot of geese droppings all over the course. So, had a couple tough lies. Damn, you choked.
You can move your ball out of like water. You can't move your ball out of standing goose poop.
Nope. I was going mulligan free. It was the best round ever. I don't want to golf anymore because I kind of have hit the mountaintop. The mountaintop being 77. It's not like I'm ever going to break par, but it was a good moment for me. So I enjoyed vacation. I'm recharged, but I'm more excited. I texted you this on like Sunday night. I'm really excited to do all this content over these next 11 games, and the playoffs are going to be, we're going to be doing a lot, both on here and with Dane too, for the playoffs. So if you missed me, if you're one of the 7 people that did, I'm back, and there's gonna be a lot of podcasts moving forward.
The golfing thing is funny because I've never broken 80 before. The first time I broke 90, I was trying to break 90 for like the first 15 years of being a golfer. I started golfing when I was like 15 or 16. I think I was in my late 20s or early 30s when I finally broke 90. And I remember the time before I broke 90, I knew I was kind of on a roll from my own standards. Mm-hmm. We were playing Keller, which out in like not Woodbury, Maplewood, I want to say, somewhere out there, off like 61. And that golf course hosted a PGA championship in like the 1940s. That's like way too short now to be an actual like PGA course. But I remember I knew I was like, you know, obviously I'm tallying the scores, but I'm not like adding up where I'm at. But it felt like, oh man, this is pretty good around here. And so my buddies and I, we finally get to the 18th tee box and they knew that I had never broken 90. And my buddy, Chris Long, who works at Channel 5 in the Twin Cities, he's like, do you want to know where you're at? And I was like, okay, tell me. He goes, you just need double bogey or better on the 18th par 4 and you break 90 for the first time. And with that information in my head, I duff my drive off the tee, like literally just like a dribbler past, you know, the junior and the women's tees. And then I hit my next shot into the fairway bunker lip. So now I'm like hitting my fourth shot from 150 yards away. The pressure of trying to break 90, the pressure of trying to break 80, whatever your personal, it's a type of sports pressure that anyone, whether you're Tiger Woods or Kyle Tighe or Phil Mackey or somewhere in between, that's the beauty of golf. Everyone feels pressure based on where you're at. By the way, I triple bogeyed and did not.
I was coming into the last three holes, and my dad's like, as long as you don't basically double bogey everything, well, I bogeyed this par 3, and then I double bogeyed 17. And, like, again, it is apples to hand grenades of what I must have felt on the 18th tee versus what Naz Reid must feel at the free throw line, you know, up one with 4 seconds, or even March Madness right now with all these kids shooting one and one, you know, double bonus type things. But it felt cool to be in a moment. I think about this with bowling too. Like if you get 3 strikes in a row to start your round, you're like
a turkey, right?
Am I gonna bowl a 300? I mean, I've then followed up with like 10 straight gutter balls. So I will very well probably go shoot a 95 this weekend. But it just gave you an insight to what goes on in a high pressure situation, rather be playing video games, changing a diaper, or trying to break 80. But I did it. I'm proud of myself. I'm gonna take a break from golf and focus solely on the Timberwolves now. And I appreciate everyone that held the fort down while I was gone. So I hope we can get Jim back on Thursday and
I think he's back.
Yep. Close this out. I mean, it did speed up on me, Phil. All of a sudden, it's like 11 games. Like we're like, oh, whole quarter of the season left.
No, it's
a sprint
happening
now. It's not a marathon. It's
and
a
they're
sprint.
5 games clear of the Clippers. Like they're in the top 3 seeds, and now it's just a matter of how high can they? They got 2 games against Denver coming up. So it's going to be wild here the next few months. So buckle up, Flagrant Howls. If you haven't already, please give us a 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple and Spotify so we can keep spreading the word of this podcast. And on the Score North YouTube channel, if you could click the like button and the subscribe button on this episode, you can help us do the same thing on the YouTube front. He's Kyle. I'm Phil. For producer Ross, this is a Timberwolves Lifestyle Podcast.